This is episode 150 of Drunk on Comics. Earwigs, Pops, and Biter Spites. Brought to you by InkWhiskey.com and Motor City Comic Con. Dude, I have no idea how they're going to do, like, the, what's the sequel for Avengers, the next part?
Age of Ultron?
The Age of Ultron, like the Infinity Gauntlet thing?
Yeah, the Infinity
Gauntlet. How the fuck are they going to do that with all the Avengers dead?
I know, especially, I mean, they showed it on a preview. I mean, the last one that was standing was Tony Stark.
Shut the fuck up, I haven't seen the movie yet.
All right, well, everybody dies except for, well, I mean, we don't know that Tony dies.
Well, it shows him walking amongst everyone dead.
Are they just comic book dead, though? Comic book movie dead?
I say they're in a movie, so it's movie dead.
Spoiler warning, Tony and I saw The Avengers, Age of Ultron.
Yeah, you guys
should. Spoiler warning, we're going to talk the shit out of that movie.
Spoiler warning, we're going to lie.
Spoiler warning, Matt's going to go la, 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 la really loud a lot of the times during this episode.
Yeah. Tony and I did get to go see it on opening night. And, welcome to Drunk on Comics.
We're here for your listening pleasure.
Yeah. Well, we're making love to your sweet ear holes right now.
Like an earwig.
Shh, you shut your dirty whore mouth.
This is disgusting. We'll come around to that later. Matt, this is a BYOP.
Okay.
Yeah, bring your own podcast.
Ah.
What?
I don't know.
That makes sense.
I've
I always bring my pee with me, and then I let it go wherever it needs to.
I've had too many podcasts already tonight. So.
Not as cast as you pod I am.
Oh, whatever, Yoda. All right. So we saw the Avengers. Overall, Tony, on a 1 to 10.
Here, I'll just leave the room and go grab a beer.
No, I would say definitely a 10.
Really?
I could not get enough of that Hulkbuster fight.
Okay, but you thought the... So, okay, well, what about the original Avengers?
This, I think... That, with them all coming together and everything, was... Good story. This just had nonstop action. They introduced a lot more people in the concept. I think it was better than the original.
Hmm.
For a couple different reasons why the original was great. The original was great just how they wrote everyone, like I said, coming together and having that be their beginning. But this, already having the team, having some dynamics, kind of briefly mentioning some of the other movies that have happened between the two. But then... James Spader fucking killed it as Ultron, and I just can't get that, there's no strings on me little song out of my head.
we're going to say anything that's not in the, in the previews in the previews already.
The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This week had a really nice build-up to it without giving anything away. They end with one of their characters is now, the Inhuman is a precog, and so she has a vision. And in the vision, she talks about metal men destroying your cities. And it was like, oh, well, we know that that's Ultron, and we know that that's coming out this week. And it was kind of fun watching a TV show and getting excited for my weekend when I get to go see the movie on the big screen. So
there, I don't know that I can give it a 10. I'm extremely happy with it, but I don't think I could give it a 10. Part of it is my film video background. Scarlett Johansson cruising down the road on her motorcycle under her hair. Looks like somebody's just going on it. That she either has the best product in the world.
It's that gooey Black Widow spidery Spider-Man.
Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He got
Incredible sweaty. Hulk about Mary.
Yeah, so... No, I thought it was great. There were definitely some things in there that I was extremely impressed with. I can't say anything more.
What'd you think of Vision though?
Damn it, that was actually what I was not going to say. There are some people that forgot the Vision were in...
They show them in a preview, though.
I know.
And they should know that that's a big part of Ultron as well, but...
One of a respected authority in my world on things theatrical and storytelling kind of gave it a B+, because he said the first one was great because it was bringing all those characters together, and so we were so excited for it that we might have let things go that might have been wrong with the first one. But he says, but now that it's been established, he goes, it was definitely really good, but it, you know, but it was starting to feel like it's a superhero movie. So
yeah, and, well, and I mean, they're like, the opening sequence was great. Now, we saw it in 3D, and I think that's part of the reason why the opening sequence to me seemed a little bit too cartoony.
Yeah,
but I think it's because the movie was not made for 3D. It's aftermarket 3D.
Yeah.
My suggestion is see it regular 2D first.
Yeah, I don't think the 3D really gave it much more.
I went to check movie times, and there's seeing it in IMAX. They're seeing it in 3D. They're seeing it in the D-Box, which is like a simulator seat that moves around and stuff. I call it the douche box. And then you can see it in 3D douche box. And I'm just like, there's all these movie options. It's kind of like buying a new car. You're going to customize your experience.
Tony and I had the 3D douche box experience for Pacific Rim.
I heard that was pretty a good idea, though.
That movie was great. I wouldn't mind seeing regular 2D douchebox Avengers.
Okay.
But I don't want to see 3D again. So, yeah, although my favorite part, though, is Scarlet Witch. This you can see, and you would, if you listened to the podcast, you'd actually know some of this stuff, too. But this one, I was glad to see Scarlet Witch did the best Psylocke I've ever seen, because that's pretty much what she was.
So. Yeah, I heard that they downgraded her powers to telekinesis and fear.
Mind
manipulation with fear, which I'm like, you just turned her into a like Jean Grey character.
Yeah, she's Psylocke. Yeah.
Okay, here is one thing though to just try to catch and let us know if you didn't, because it wasn't until after the movie that we noticed. A, they're called enhanced. So not mutants. They never say the M word. But I don't remember them hearing their names except for the twins or the Maximoffs.
Well, no, but I also saw there was something I can't say without giving it away, but I know that Pietro's name was written at one point.
It was on his underwear, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Yeah. His name's Calvin. Calvin Pietro Klein. But no, there were a lot of good things. This movie really did set up where Civil War is going to go, though.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, for a good precursor of shit to come. But anyway, check that out. Pro tip, there is a teaser after the movie ends, but there's no stinger all the way at the end. So once you see the one little short clip, which I won't say what it was, you don't have to stick around for like that Howard the Duck shit at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, but maybe I want to see, you know, all the people who get thanked in the movie. You know, maybe I'm grateful.
Well, you
for
can
the
if
movie.
You want, but just for some of you those can. People that want to get out,
you got more important things to do. You just spent 2 hours, 2.5 hours, because it's like 2 hours and 21 minutes, I think.
Yeah, there's life. More important things to do, like pee.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but
I guess if you have held it the entire time.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's get things kicked off with Off the Shelf. Brought to you once again by Motor City Comic Con, happening, we're less than 2 weeks, guys.
Less than 2 weeks? That's less than a fortnight.
That is. That's like a third night, right? Or wait, no, if it's a third, third's more than a fourth.
It's like between a week and a fortnight.
All right, May 15th.
Math wasn't our strong suit. Hence the reason we talk about comic books on the weekend.
May 15th, 16th, and 17th happening at the Suburban Collection Showplace in beautiful Novi, Michigan. Check them out at MotorCityComicCon.com and get your tickets. I don't know. It's with this lineup, I wouldn't be surprised if they sell out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and make sure you come by the table and see us. And bring us cookies.
We do eat cookies.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
All right. Who wants to kick it off? All right, The fingers are being pointed at me, but they should be pointed at me, not up. Guys, that, a little different what you're doing with your fingers there. So, all right. I've got Silk number 3 this week from Marvel Comics. This is written by Robbie Thompson, who will be appearing at Motor City, I believe Saturday only. Artist Stacy Lee, Ian Herring did colors, and VC's Travis Lanham did letters on this book. Dave Johnson did the cover on this book. And for those of you new to the show or new to the book, this is a story about a young girl by the name of Cindy Moon, who was bitten by the same radioactive spider that bit Peter, the Amazing Spider-Man, Parker.
Who didn't that butter spite? Me not talk well either.
I don't know. Who didn't that biter spite?
I couldn't have fucked that up more if I tried.
I had to think it to say it wrong. So, all right. So, Mindy Soon is the character. And I'm not going to mess around with the letters in Silk because I might say something really bad. But anyway, this book, when it first came out, really blew me away. And a lot of it really has to do with the art from Stacy Lee. Matt, have you seen any of the Silk books yet?
I have not.
All right, I need to pass this over to you.
Passing.
Because this is, it has almost a animated Japanese feel to it. Like, I mean, it kind of, and I mean this only in the positive way, it has kind of a Cartoon Network / anime feel to it.
Yeah, it's got real hard lines, and really angular.
A lot of speed lines too.
Yep.
In there for the action, which is where I'm getting the.
Even this one where she slid across the floor and it looks like she wet herself, and so there's a trail. that's just being ironic, I guess.
That's a Silk trail.
It's a Silk trail.
So
it's like a really bad movie I once saw called Spider Babe, and she shot spider out of her clitoris.
What?
Never mind. Let's move on.
Go
ahead and Google search it, people.
Not safe for work, I'm assuming.
No.
But okay. So anyway, this book, when the first issue came out, I was blown away, just because, you know, what you've got going on here from
you couldn't believe that spider bit somebody else.
No, I couldn't believe that biter spit someone else. It's the biter spits. Biter spites. What is it? God damn it. All right, so, but no, Thompson and Lee have put together one of the most amazing team-ups on a book that honestly could have been a throwaway book for Marvel. It could have been a cash grab where they're like, hey, look, we want to have another female lead. People like Spider-Man. But no, they came together. They put this, you know, they've built up this character so well that you want to see Cindy win in everything she's doing. Issue 1 was fantastic. Issue 2 was even better. And issue 3 is this amalgamation of both those first two issues and steps it up even more.
I think you've reviewed every single issue so far.
I think I have. Because it's just fucking amazing. This one's a lot more action-oriented for those people that are really wanting to see how she's doing in the fight. But it's so well done with flashbacks in here. And Matt, I don't know if you noticed when you're going through, but, you know, there's a couple pages where the colors are a lot more muted.
Mm-hmm.
Like every other panel.
Yeah.
It's because it's present-time flashback. And it's just a really nice way of doing it. The writing by Thompson, as she's beating the crap out of this villain and flashing back to when she was beating up this other guy, the dialogue is written in such a way that it's mirroring both scenarios at the same time.
Hmm.
Really, really beautiful work. Black Cat's in here. She's kind of the, she's kind of the, not really the villain, but almost. And it's interesting because In here, Silk asks her at one point, she goes, hey, didn't you used to be a good guy? Or didn't you used to be a hero or whatever it was? Mm-hmm. And she goes, there's no such thing as good guys or bad guys anymore. So, interesting. But I don't know how many people are checking this book out. And I think everybody really should.
Should, yeah. Well, I mean, to continue on from what I was saying, through the Spider-Verse, everything, I want to know how this is going to continue once Secret Wars hits, once the big day hits, because they're redoing a lot of... Obviously, they're going to continue on with this. Having a female lead character is very beneficial for many publishers to have. Having it interesting, but... Hopefully, I'm hoping after Secret Wars happens, Peter Parker finally does hang up his web slingers and let this be the new whatever. But have they introduced anything about her being near Peter and their pheromones and everything? Because that was a huge to-do with Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, actually, Peter has shown up in a number of the issues. In fact, I know he was in issue one. I don't remember if he was in two. Tony, just tear the fucking bag open. There you go. You're trying to be quiet. I can just hear it going, yeah. But self-adhesive bags. But he shows up in here, and I think they have figured out. Now, I didn't know about that before, and it hasn't really been anything that was that has made a difference in the story so far, because I didn't read any of the Spider-Verse stuff, so I don't know. But
so when they get together, they just want to make a whole bunch of spider babies?
Yeah, and one of them will have a little spider sack. You know, it'll be great.
Does she bite his head off after copulating?
Well, I don't know. Like, well...
They'll reproduce more than a Catholic rabbit.
God, that was a great line. So, but yeah. Anyway, check this book out, guys. I mean, if you guys want something that's awesome. And plus, I think it's the first Asian-American female lead, too.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of nice to get a little bit different culture mixed in here as well. So, all right, Matt.
Sounds good.
Did you read something this week?
I did.
What?
Come on, I'm back. I got new Avengers to review. Because, you know, nothing's happening with the Avengers recently.
No.
Nothing at all.
No, nothing.
All right, 1 month left. They're tying up a whole bunch of loose ends. And in New Avengers number 33, story by Jonathan Hickman, artist Mike Deodato, and colors by Frank Martin, and letters by VC's Joe Carmagna.
Joe!
I've got the beautiful, I think it's the standard cover, and there's a little discrepancy. Marvel's website says that Dustin Weaver does the standard cover, but the inside says the cover art is by Gabriel Delato.
So. Let me see. That looks like Delato from here, but...
Yep, so I'm not sure. I'm probably more willing to bet that the internet is wrong than the book, but that's just because I'm an academic. So, the cover art's beautiful. It's got a picture of Doom kind of broken and hurt. In this story, we find out how Doom has become Rabum Allah, the great destroyer that was ominously hinted at the beginning of the story arc with all the incursions in the worlds being destroyed. Essentially, Molecule Man leads Doom back to the beginning and says that Molecule Man is the Beyonder's weapon to destroy the universe, that he's essentially a ticking time bomb. And he is a constant in every universe. He's always the same in every universe. Whereas Doom, there might be variations between him because he might be a poet in one world. He might be a good guy. He might be a bad guy. Molecule Man is always Molecule Man because the Beyonders created him to be the bomb that will detonate and destroy all multiverse universes simultaneously. So in order to stop them, he tells Doom to go around from world to world killing him. Killing Molecule Man. And every time he does it, he'll gain more insight, he'll gain more power, and eventually, in order to do this, Doom is the one responsible for making Earths collide into each other and starting all the incursions. He really is the great destroyer that is breaking everything.
I just like that it has a lot to do with time travel, and anything with that is awesome.
Well, that's what Doom realizes, that the one advantage that he possibly has over the Beyonders is that the Beyonders can't time travel. they can only exist in their linear understanding of things. Whereas Doom has the ability to go back in time, recollect resources, and maybe try again.
I just had an idea, though, Tony.
What?
Do you think that the only reason time travel is awesome is because whoever invented it went back in time and made everybody think it was awesome? Like, everyone's like, that's stupid. He's like, I'll fix that.
Yeah.
Doc Brown was a genius. Enough said. Doc Brown. Guy who invented time travel.
Flux capacitor?
Oh, that doesn't... Oh,
DeLorean?
No. Oh, you, wait. Hold on. Let me check my almanac and see if I can find out who he is.
So, anyways, Doom is telling all that has happened to Doctor Strange because he kind of understands that, you know, Strange will understand what Doom's doing here. And essentially, Doom has created this really big weapon that they don't really define what it is, but they just say it's like the perfect weapon to throw at the Beyonders. And Doom takes this weapon and shows up at the exact same spot where Thor and Hyperion and the great powers that were going to try to stop this just fell, right outside the rift where the Beyonders are. And he shoots his giant weapon at them. And at the end, he's going... That sounds
really filthy.
Yeah. And at the end, he just says, no, 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 because once again, Doom can't succeed. And it's really unfair, because I really feel that Doom needs to succeed once in a while. It's leading into... It's, again, tying up loose ends. It's giving explanation for who all these players are in this big cosmic struggle, explaining what's been happening over the past... Is it 2 years now that this has been going on? Seems like it. And
it's actually only... Well, they started the 8 month... We already talked about the 8 month time travel.
Yeah, 8 months ago. Started
then. Yeah. But yeah, it's been...
But the incursion storyline has been going on for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
So they don't actually show Doom dying. They just show big flashes of energy. And then T'Challa and Reed Richards back on Earth realize that most of the multiverse has suddenly disappeared.
And ultimately, there's less than, well, two dozens.
There were, like, still millions of and billions of universes. And then all of a sudden, there was, like, 12 universes left because Doom destroyed them all. So Doom is the one responsible for killing everything in order to save at least something.
And I know for as much as, Derek, you don't care for the mechanisms of what's going on in the Marvel Universe, these are the books to actually truly read if you want to know anything of why the fuck things are going on and what the Secret Wars is about. These are the head books that are leading up to it, and now that they've finally finished, Secret Wars number one comes out sometime, I believe, next week, and that's where shit gets real, and all of our books that we've been reading are going to get flipped upside down.
And the thing about it is that it's a pretty... It's not an easy read.
You know what I'm laughing about? Because you're like, my life got flipped, turned upside down.
So it's not a really easy read because Hickman goes into kind of this esoteric understanding of time travel and stories, and he doesn't really give you any easy answers to it. But it does explain what Doom has been doing and how he's responsible for essentially destroying most of the multiverse in order to try to save something, and that is one of the reasons why I think Doom is one of the best heroes slash villains, because he's so twisted in his justification of preserving life.
See, you guys think I don't know what's going on, but I got my New York Bulletin newspaper here. It's filling me in on all the things that I need to know. A little newspaper about Secret Wars.
Okay, well, you have it. Did you actually read it?
Did I actually drink it? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
No, I...
Did the piter spite you?
The piter spites. Yeah, no, I have not... I have not been able to beat it yet.
All right.
Did you look at the pictures?
Yeah.
That's what we usually do.
Yeah, I like pictures.
So anyways, good explanation. Nice wrap-up for this. I'm looking forward to see what happens next. But I hope that what Doom did actually, or what all these heroes have been doing, actually has some significance and consequences when we get to Secret Wars. That somehow they weaken the Beyonders to a point that we might have a chance. That'd be neat.
Neat.
You know what's neat is sound effects. And this week's, well, not this week's, but I guess this quarterly's, I don't know, Vertigo's quarterly, number one, SFX Pop. And it seems as last year, most of their quarterlies were based off of the four main colors in an inkjet printer.
Yeah, the CMYK.
Yes. This is now introducing sound effects and mainly stories that revolve around the word pop.
You know, it'd be great if they had one that was like about driving.
The Doppler effect will come in later.
There are quite a few stories in here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 stories in here.
You can count past 10. It's pretty amazing.
I he's not actually counting. Like,
it was so funny how he pulled up all of his fingers, and then he looked around the room for something else.
Fuck, there's actually only 9.
Okay.
And so, in order, there's a lot of work that was done on this, but I want to focus on three of the ones that I personally enjoyed, and it just so happened they were right next to each other, right in the middle of this book. One of them, Pop Up, written by David Winnick and artist David Hahn, revolves around a little boy who seems to, breathing apparatus to his nose. So either he's stuck in his room or whatever, but just talking about certain people couldn't be there for his birthday, and they're going to read up his favorite story later, which is a pop-up book. So there you get the word pop. And in this is a future tech world too, with holograms and everything. So to read a pop-up book about the past and the fantasy is kind of him escaping his world. Well, when reading it and describing the dragon popping the knight off the pages, the knight comes to life. And it's one of those kind of like little fantasy stories that a kid may have of like, oh, and now the book's real and things are going on. And then seeing that where the mace lands in water and how this just doesn't work out, but
you didn't say the pop. Word. Damn it. That was a plosive.
You should try using your mouth to make that noise again instead.
But that he gets at the very end when it's kind of, you know, after he saves the day, and not even to explain it too much, just the whole concept of the comic or the character saying, you know, come on in, join me, come away from your world and you know, be part of this pages. To me, it felt like back when I was a kid and I got lost in books and just being part of them and wanting to have, you know, Iron Man say, hey, come jump on in, buddy.
You wanted to be in the never-ending story.
Yes.
Atreyu.
The second story that I just thought, mainly for the color and just kind of like the weird ending at the end, which was Pop Goes the World. Words by Erica Schultz, Pretty Pictures by Sarah Richards.
Hey, that's we were just talking about Sarah recently because she's going to be at Motor City,
mm-hmm.
and she's doing the covers for Gem and the Holograms for the subscription variant.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why this story just makes so well, this beautiful alien world with these kind of, I don't know.
Everything is curvy.
Yeah.
Everything has kind of that rainbowish tint to it.
Yeah. And actually, this scene in itself reminded me of Gem and the Holograms with these couple creatures just kind of striking a pose. And this is all revolving around a wedding and how this one person took this girl's man and whatever. And the lines, this just had me dying. One of the girls goes, I saw him first. The other girl goes, well, I saw him last. Night. And you know, it's a whole just giant fight that's so colorful and mesmerizing that you're just looking at this and you're just like, damn, that's beautiful. But then at the end, when Pop goes the world and you realize it's a wedding and what popped it was this little dog and that they were all creatures within the bubble.
They lived in a soap bubble, which explains the color pattern, the rainbowy color that you often seen in bubbles and soap dish soap, and the kind of whimsical curves to everything,
yeah.
Which was, I thought, really inventive.
And so as I was saying, I've picked pretty much the three, what I felt, the greatest stories within here.
Can we please not talk about the third one?
No, well, I'll quick talk about one other one, only because I thought the pop-ups were kind of funny, which is Little Medals, because it was about this girl who pretty much had her phone go pop and do an achievement for almost everything that she did throughout the day, which I thought was kind of comical. But no, we are going to talk about this last one, because holy fuck, this is like...
I'm going to go to my happy place right now. Yes. I'm not going to listen anymore.
I think Dirk Manning would appreciate the level of horror in this story.
Very much so. And I have to... It's called Earwig Out. Written by Clay McLeod Chapman. Art by Simon Kudransky. And this, in of itself, is one of those stories that you've heard or you think about of you're just sitting there in bed in an earwig.
This is why you don't want to go camping.
Yes, those little things that possess an elongated body.
It starts with the scientific name, which I can't pronounce, and then it says the common earwig. And I was done reading this, but Tony made me continue, and I hate you for it.
Yes, because when it just is crawling up the guy's face and then into his ear, and that's just the worst part of it. Like,
hey. You remember when we were talking about biter spites?
Yeah.
Can we go back to that?
Because when he tries to get a Q-tip to try to get him out, no, this thing just burrows even further in, and went it further into its eardrum and just pops right through it. Derek's was better.
No.
You can just imagine that excruciating pain.
No, I can't, because I choose not to.
Just imagine it, though. Just imagine.
This is why I drink, Tony, is to forget the fact that earwigs exist in this world.
Daddy drinks because I cry.
The art on this, just seeing this earwig go through this guy's ear canal, and then further up into the brain, and then the scientific part of saying what the earwig is, but then the different parts of the brain maze. The temporal cortex, which is auditory, the facial motor nexus, and you see this earwig trying to just chomping on parts of the brain, but then you see the person's face contorting, feeling the pressure of this thing just dying.
Yeah, that's about as far as I got. You can stop now.
Yeah.
And then also just going through other parts, and then him just wanting to get this thing out of his ear and taking those scissors. This is truly, yes, Dirk. I think Dirk would cringe at this. And the last just little thing of just watching this thing crawl out of the other ear. Oh, and all revolving around the word pop. That one spot of it popping through the eardrum.
It's going to irritate the fuck out of everybody listening.
Probably. I hope their ears don't pop.
This story in and of itself, it was worth it. I loved all of them. There's a bunch of other ones, too, in here, all revolving around the word.
So what Tony's saying is that you really have somebody that you hate. Send him a copy of the earwig story contained in this story, this quarterly called Pop.
Yes. Very well done. I've never cringed as much as I have reading a comic book as much as that, as you guys did as well. So.
And I'm pretty sure Tony popped. All right. Well, enough of that. Anybody got any soda?
Soda, eh? Oh, but I got some news for you.
Oh, do ya? What do you got?
Well, it was news, but now it's old.
Did you see that we had a suggestion for Best on Tap this week?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Are you going to take that suggestion?
No, I just wanted to mention that we had a suggestion for it. Okay, big news, spoilers here. Batman and Joker are dead.
Wait, that was like last year, right? And then at the end of Death of the Family, Joker died, didn't he? And Batman died, but he didn't really die. He went back in time, an infinite crisis of some kind.
I have so many terrible jokes, actually, but I'm actually going to be somewhat tasteful at this
so
point.
Scott Snyder ends his run with Batman, killing the Dark Knight and the Clown Prince of Crime.
The Crown Prince of Climbing. Yeah.
Batman saying something to the effect of, like, I'm just going to rest here with an old friend, and then a bunch of rocks cave in on them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Two things. One, I heard many fans are upset by the fact that Snyder took the Joker's origin and suggests that he is somehow a kind of mystical being of chaos and disunity that's tied to the place.
He's Loki.
Yeah, but very centralized in, yes, like the Gotham area, which explains why Gotham has so many crazies. Kind of like we built our town on an ancient Indian burial ground and bad spirits walk among us.
Kind of like we built this city on rock and roll.
Oh.
So he sounded like a robot getting off.
So that was one thing that upsets people. The thing that just bugs me is a little bit like, can we really stop just killing characters or saying that they're dead only to bring them back a couple years later?
Well, yeah, but didn't Snyder also go full on Rick Grimes with Alfred's hand?
Yeah. See, but that was my leading on to point is that why can't you do things to the characters that leave scars?
Maim, right? The shit out of them.
That's why Bane breaking Batman's back was a really cool like storyline, because you know Batman's still there, but you know Batman can't be Batman.
Or the original Barbara Gordon, you know,
yep,
ending up going from Batgirl to Oracle because her
back is broken and she can no longer do that. And now that character has progressed, has changed, but is still around because you know Batman is not a character that's going to stay dead.
It's really too bad that Barbara Gordon wasn't like in some weird cave with a bunch of chiropractors and masseuses to be able to work her back in so that she could climb up.
All you have to do is hang on a rope.
Yeah.
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 So, thank you, Nolan. Yeah. And so that just bugs me with most of these killing off of characters is that I think that there's so many different things that you can do to scar the character and let those emotional scars play out in a story that would be way more compelling and interesting than, oh, the character's dead.
Yeah, like, I don't know, maybe kill his sidekick again.
only if the fans get a vote for which one.
Yeah, and then let him come back later. But the problem is that, you know, maybe it's because we're jaded because nobody stays dead.
No, Uncle Ben stays dead.
Uncle Ben and Bruce Wayne's parents. And Krypton.
Krypton.
Those are pretty...
Except parts of Krypton are still alive. They're just shrunken.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So we don't get to count that one anymore.
Yeah. So, all right. This is actually... Here's the way to do it. After a 20-year run, basically, Hellboy, we don't know exactly when, but Hellboy is coming to an end. All right. So, I want
to see them make another movie.
Who else really wants to make another movie? Ron Perlman really wants to make a movie.
Yeah. But you know what? Cheers to fucking Mike Mignola for crazy run on that. And, yeah, now that it's finishing up, I think I'll start reading all of it from the beginning.
just get the trade paperbacks?
No, just the compendiums that are like they're as tall as a TARDIS. So that's going to be interesting to see what's done there, because the great thing is Hellboy can come to an end, mm-hmm, but that world doesn't have to.
No.
You know, so that's a nice way of doing it. Something that should probably have ended, It didn't. It ended on TV for financial reasons. Was Revolution?
Mm.
Yeah, and I started watching that show, but it dragged on a little too long. However,
you and I both did. We wanted to get into it. And we're like,
it's a cool idea.
Yeah, we even talked about it on the show a couple times. But I do. Here's the thing with almost anything. I would like for those fans that did continue watching it, and there's been plenty of shows I've watched that just get canceled, and you're left wondering what the fuck happened.
Like most shows that premiere on Fox?
Yeah, especially when they run them out of order.
Firefly.
Yeah.
Bastards. But, hey, just like Firefly kind of has a send-off on their comic books, so too will Revolution.
I've never seen anybody cosplaying as anyone from Revolution, though.
So whether they're cosplaying or not, there's still people that enjoy the books. I mean, I could say that I haven't seen...
And, you know, I haven't met any people who are cosplaying, but I've met plenty of people who are preparing for a world like Revolution.
Doomsday Preppers.
Just go to Northern Michigan. You'll find them.
You don't even have to go to Northern.
I know.
Dude, I'll take you to... well, I'm not going to say where because I don't want them knowing that I know. But someplace...
There's bunkers. That's all we'll say.
Yeah, so DC Comics is going to be doing the wrap-up of the two-season show with a four-issue digital comic book series. So apparently it only takes 88 pages to wrap up 2 years.
Yeah. Well, and I still find it ironic that, you know, you watch it on TV, but it's a show about there being no electricity and power, and then they're going to release it only on digital comics where you need power to read them. Those won't survive into the world of Revolution.
You know, I think the point where the show lost me was it the point where they...
Was the hatch?
No, it wasn't the hatch. But where they had a little flicker of power for the first time, and the woman's like, give me my phone, and she turns it on, and it boots up, and she's able to see a picture of her kid. But I'm like going, I have an iPhone. That's what she has. There's no fucking way that battery still lasts.
You know, the point where the show lost me is when they introduced earwigs.
Yeah.
Still hate you.
All right, so Drax is getting his own solo series.
Could be interesting. Except the character has changed so much from its origins, which is kind of okay. But I'm wondering if they're going to continue with the very much cinematic version of Drax that...
Well, it's almost like he's a wrestler now.
Yeah, he doesn't get the sarcasm and...
Yeah,
like if he was played by a wrestler or something.
Or like an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, like maybe CM Punk.
He was a wrestler, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's also an MMA fighter.
But hey, I think CM Punk writing the book is going to be a nice... He might have some insight into the characters of
That's
Drax.
What I'm thinking. He did the Thor Annual number one, which was actually pretty decent.
Okay.
You know, and then he had a little short in the Vertigo Strange Sports Stories.
Okay.
So, you know, he's...
Give him a shot.
Yeah, and dude's been a comic book fan for a long time. You know, I mean, granted, just because you're a fan doesn't mean you can write, but at least you have an understanding. And you know, you're going to have a knowledge of how things work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's playing in a sport wearing like weirdo Marvel garb.
That's true.
You know, I mean, because that'd just be stupid.
What if like all the NFL teams had helmets that were based off of Marvel heroes?
That would be like weird, like the Carolina Wolverines,
or the Detroit Beasts because it's a big blue beast.
Yeah, or the Chicago Ultrons.
Yeah, my favorite. I like the Miami Namors.
No, I like the Agents of Oakland.
Yeah,
because they already have someone with one eye patch.
Okay, so I do have to admit one really dumb thing of me. That it took me a long time to figure out. I'm still not 100% sure that I think I got it, but I think I got it, was the Arizona Phoenix. I'm sitting there like looking at the picture going, I don't understand, like the Arizona Phoenix, it's Phoenix, Arizona. And then it was like later, I'm like, God damn it, I'm an X-Men fan. I'm just dumb, but... Yeah, actually, if you guys go to Chron.com, it's CHRON.com, they put up a thing where there are football helmets which were inspired by Marvel Comics, and every team has its own.
But they're a really nice amalgamation of the two different, you know, the Marvel element and the football element. It still has the color scheme. It still has the kind of same feel. You can understand why the Indianapolis Colts are the Galactus, because the horseshoe looks like Galactus's super big helmet.
Dude, the Green Bay Iron Fist, I think, was probably my
favorite. That was pretty cool. Like, the color scheme and stuff. But I still crack the Patriots were Star-Lord. But I still think the Miami Namors is the funniest
part. Like
I laughed out loud.
Dallas Captains, I mean, they didn't have to really change much on their logo.
I thought the Texans being Odin was a pretty cool, like, I didn't see that one coming.
The Seattle Hulks was a great logo. God, that was a good one.
How the Cincinnati Bengals tiger stripes were turned into Carnage's symbiote mess.
Which who got the thing?
The Browns, who normally just have an orange helmet. Yep. It's now an orange helmet with Rocky texture.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's just some really fucking cool stuff in here. You know, and the Tampa Bay Punishers.
Yeah, because it's got a skull on it. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of obvious that there's a certain element of that logo that blends well with the superhero. And then sometimes it's like the Ravens are the Hawkeyes, and you're just like, who cares about that?
Yeah, the Washington Groots.
Yeah, that made me feel bad because I still hate the name the Redskins, but then I'm like, oh, but they got represented by Groot, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Quick follow up to a story we had, that Wonder Woman movie does have a new director tied to it. We'd mentioned that Michelle McLaren was not going to be directing, and it's now been announced that Patty Jenkins, who directed the Charlize Theron movie Monster, is going to be directing this. So, okay. You know, that's a pretty damn good movie. So, you know,
I'm still concerned with DC's cinematic universe, but I'll give it a shot until I won't judge it too much until I've seen it.
Yeah.
But
all right. Well, I think that's pretty much going to do it for news for us this week. Unless there's anything else that you guys needed to toss in there.
No, just want to go back to, though, please, comic book people, writers, places, if you see a TV show getting canceled, make it a comic book. I mean, with the recently canceled Constantine, I hope they can do that.
Yeah, it'd be great to see Constantine in comic book form.
That's outrageous. It's truly, truly outrageous.
I hate you because it was so good.
Yeah. All right, Indie Turnpike this week. I was waiting for it. Indie Turnpike this week, I have Resident Alien, the Sam Hain mystery, number 0 of 3.
I was going to say, at first I'm thinking cross between Resident Evil and the Xenomorph aliens. That would creep me out.
All right, so when I first picked this up, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to pick this up because it looks cool, but I don't like the fact that it's 0 of 3, because if you can have 0 of 3, could you not also have, like, 7 of 3?
I think they're as good as counting as Tony is.
Oh, wait, there's 9. So, basically what this is that issue 0 is collecting chapters 1, 2, and 3 of Resident Alien, the Sam Hain Mystery, which was originally published as a cereal in Dark Horse Presents Volume 3.
What flavored cereal?
Different kind of cereal, Tony.
Oh.
It's like summer. It's
like the
summer.
Killer kind.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, Killer Clowns from Outer Space kind. So it's... Now, even knowing that this was a three-part...
Pre-published yes, story.
This book flowed like it was meant to be one comic. So
good writing.
Yeah. And so, speaking of which, it was written by Peter Hogan, and the art is by Steve Parkhouse on this. The idea behind this book is that there's an alien who was sent here to Earth because there's a probe of very intelligent beings out there. There's a group of very intelligent beings out there who sent a probe to Earth like they do with all the other worlds. Well, the probe crash-landed, and the self-destruct or self-detonate function didn't work. So they're sending this alien to make sure that it's destroyed.
Okay.
And so in the meantime, he has to hide out here on Earth. Well, he looks like an alien, but he has some special powers to make people not be able to see him.
It looks like one of the gray aliens? He
looks like a cross between the aliens, between those kind of aliens and the like
Vulcan. Bulgosi. They got a little bit bald, pointy ear elves type deal.
Yeah, or like, you know, the old school Dracula, you know, like the Bela Lugosi
yeah,
style.
Like Nosferatu almost.
Nosferatu, yeah. All
right.
That kind of sell. But this is a really interesting book because he's basically pretending to be a doctor in this small town called Patience. And while he has to wait for his people to, you know, come get him. But just...
I get the resident part now.
The resident alien? Yeah. So it's fun, though, because of the fact that they never draw him as a regular person. They draw him as an alien the whole time. And it's odd because you know he looks different, but everybody else treats him just like he is a standard old person. The thing that caught me is that he has a friend in this, and it's theoretically possible she's more than a friend, but I don't think that's the way it's going. Which, if they named her, I didn't see it. I went back and read this book again, and I'm like, wait, what's her name? And then I flip back through, and I can't find her name. But I absolutely love the look of this girl. And I'm going to give you guys this book because there's something about the way that she's drawn that is so wonderfully attractive. I mean, her posture, her body language, the way her hair falls over one eye all the time, the little looks that she gives.
Parkhouse, couldn't be the spaghetti strap halter top and the short Daisy Duke jeans?
Yeah, but, you know, even when they show her in other stuff, there's just something about her that I don't know what it is. I just really like the fact that it's one of the most natural-looking people that you see in comics. Like, very, very, like, real-life postures and poses, and that's hard to do. So,
yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. So, you know, great book. It kind of has the feel of a book that would have been released digitally as well. But just all-around beautiful thing. And I'm hooked. I like issue zeros. They should hook you, but normally they leave you with like,
yeah, okay. I know where this is going.
Yeah, this one. I'm looking forward to you know, issue 9 of 3.
So you're gonna start looking for some more UFOs?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Actually, I know what I'm gonna look for first is another drink. Tony, what should I drink?
Well, what you should drink this week is a mixture of, let me find it, with a dash of maybe. you're going to mix in a glass 1.5 ounces. Pretty much these pours are meaning to be, I don't know, what a real drink would be.
They're liberal suggestions.
Yes, because you should definitely add twice this amount.
Well, yeah, but this is the base mixture. If you want a real drink, you double or triple it.
1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/2 ounce of triple sec, 1/3 ounce of lime juice, 1/2 ounce of Midori, and you mix that in a shaker, you pour it in, and then you take 2 ounces of grape pucker, and you slowly let that settle on into the drink, and that is a Donatello, which can be paired with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 45 that just came out, where the guys get back and embrace their dead brother.
So it's a French kamikaze with great pucker?
Yes.
That is what it is, isn't it? Oh, Wait, what was the fourth ingredient?
Did
you say Midori?
Yeah.
Okay, no.
Midori
no.
Gives it the green color.
Yep, sorry. That's not French kamikaze. French kamikaze has...
pretty much the first part was a kamikaze.
Yeah. Kamikaze with... Yeah. Actually sounds really tasty.
Mm-hmm.
French kamikaze with Chambord. Added to it, so.
So,
but should you know? Could we put that in a flask and drink it out of a flask, dude?
Well, I think that there should be 5 flasks.
Okay.
Each full of each of those things, and you know what would be great is those flasks could look like old school NES cartridges.
That would be amazing.
Blow
where
my mind.
Where could I get one of those?
You could get those at inkwhiskey.com, or better yet, when you come see us at Motor City. Buy one from us there.
We'll be selling them.
Yeah, we will. So, but go look at inkwhiskey.com first and kind of take a pick. We won't have the full lineup, but we'll have the one you want.
That's true. Which is the one we have.
Yeah. That, but and you'd be like, oh, that's not the one I wanted. Yes, it is.
That's often Tony's pickup line on Saturday night. I know I'm not the guy you want, but I'm the one you're going to get.
I thought of a different version of the same thing. I know I wasn't the guy you were hoping for, but I'm the last one here. I'm the only one left. Tony?
You like biter spites?
How do you like your earwigs now, fuckwad? you guys got anything else left before we wrap this shit up?
No. I'm just going to go home and clean my ears.
Last call?
Last call.
Oh, Avengers came out, the normal Avengers title, number 44. 1 month until time runs out. So we get a lot of, again, more answers to what's going on. So read it, I mean, if you're already reading it.
Get to finally meet the Misfits and Gem and the Holograms, number 2.
Which cover did you get?
I got Pizzazz's cover.
Oh, I got the subscription cover by Sarah Richard.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, again, curly lines.
Pretty pictures by Sarah.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to meeting her. She's been at Motor City a couple times, but I've never had the chance to actually talk to her. Pisces, number 1 from Image and Shadowline, from Curtis J. Wiebe and Johnny Christmas. I just wanted to say Johnny Christmas. And They're Not Like Us, number 5.
Who's not like us?
They're not.
Who's they?
Yeah. Now I'm starting to wonder if you listen to the podcast or you're just that much like your brother.
And who's on first?
Yeah, exactly. That book's still really good.
Inhuman number 14. I can't get enough of Inhumans. And then Superior Iron Man number 8. God, Tony Stark's a dick.
Okay, so I've decided I'm going trades on Inhuman. Who did that?
But this is still sold. Oh, the art?
Yeah.
I have to open it up.
They've been going like every 3 issues or so. They've been going back and forth.
Well, yeah, because they're putting them out so damn fast.
Yeah.
Andrea Rujo.
Okay. Tony, you totally missed Pastaways number 2.
What?
Yeah.
They did not have that at my shop.
Yep. And then Brides of Helheim, Matt.
Oh, Helheim.
Yeah.
Is that the sequel to the first one, or is it the third one? Okay.
No, that's the sequel, and so interesting enough, Matt, I don't know, because I don't know how much you and your brother have had a chance to talk, and since we haven't released it yet, I know you couldn't have heard this one, but we interviewed the colorist Nick Filardi.
Okay.
At C2E2, Daredevil number 15, and then another Cullen Bunn book, Hellbreak number 2. So,
speaking of Daredevil, you guys finished it finally?
Yeah.
I have not.
Oh, the big Daredevil fan in the room, and he hasn't even finished it.
My favorite thing is when Daredevil's ears get... It really hurts him.
Oh, that one, yeah, people just walk up and they're like, they clap real loud around him. And
they just go...
Yeah, they give him a wet willy. So.
Or earwigs.
Yeah.
Matt Murdock's real enemy. That's gotta be a super villain from the late 60s or 70s. I'm the earwig.
Why do you think that there might be?
But part of Daredevil's villains, they didn't know that he was blind.
Yeah.
So they didn't know that he relied on his sense of hearing so well. So
yeah. All right, guys. Cool.
Hey, it was fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Stick around this week. We've got a special cross pod with our good buddy Jay from Elegant Weapon, where we're talking about maybe we probably mentioned half of the guest list at best, and it took us, I don't know what, Tony, half hour to get through?
Yeah.
To get through like half the guest list at Motor City, because it's that fucking crazy. So check that out later this week. We've got more interviews from C2E2 coming up. Guess in the meantime, just keep reading your comics, and we'll be back next week. Talk to you more about them then.
That was lame.
Tony?